Stay hungry, stay foolish.
So now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Ciarán Hart, General Manager of Uber Ireland. Welcome to the show, Ciarán.
Thank you for having me, Aidan.
Good to have you, man. And it'd be really interesting, before we go into Uber world, to get your background, because you've had a really varied background that has a common denominator the whole way through, which we'll touch on in a few minutes.
Yeah, you're probably right. I've always been involved in digital businesses and kind of the media side of things as well. So back in Australia, I worked with the equivalent of the Golden Pages there, looking at sort of turning those print businesses online. And then went into classifieds businesses, and specifically realestate.com.au was the company I last worked for back in Australia, which was, you know, again, one of those first kind of big businesses which took a really traditional print background and started making money from it in an online world. So
when was that?
That was, God, now I'm showing my age, aren't I? So that must have always been around 10 years ago that I was back in Australia. Yeah. With that, I came over to Ireland, 8 years ago with the Irish Times, who invited me over. I was the commercial operations director for their sort of digital strain of sites.
Yeah, so right into the recession in Ireland.
It was April 2008, so I really felt like I'd missed that party.
I guess so many of people who are working in digital started then, and I suppose that was the opportunity. It was like, there's a need here. It's time to start investing. It's the age-old problem where, you know, wait until there's a burning platform, or the platform is actually burnt.
Absolutely.
To do something about it. But you were brought in, and you mentioned the property part, so that was really interesting. So you came over into Ireland, but you worked on publishing, and then what was the next step?
So I came over just at the time Irish Times had purchased myhome.ie. They also had titles in Ireland.com, which we're trying to set up as a lifestyle site. And then there was some other sites, and also sort of like a media, electric media sales business as well that they had part ownership of. So there was a kind of a few digital properties there that they were bundling together to see how we could work those, and I guess a little bit outside of the standard scope for the Irish Times.
Yeah, and what was your next step then after the Irish Times?
I was at the Irish Times for around 4 years, and then I had always kind of known the Fallon brothers, who set up Daft.ie and Distilled Media. Eamon had actually spent time in Australia looking to set up Daft in Australia, and of course the realestate.com.au business would have been very familiar to him. So at that point, I really got excited about the idea of getting back into a digital first business, I guess, and really get back into the digital game. So that was an easy job to accept, and they're a really interesting indigenous company, guys, you know, starting from scratch on property was their first big play, and then obviously they rolled into boards and adverts.ie, and then, you know, the journal.ie, which is doing really well for them now too.
Yeah, and they were such early movers. I mean, you know, Brian was 16.
Yeah, 16.
I know. Like, amazing.
What do you call it, your gap year or your leaving cert? So yeah, like an incredible story. And they did really well. You know, they did really well to set it up. But I guess in the background, they kind of did really well to focus on it as a business and grow it rather than just selling it or flipping it the first opportunity they got.
And they did it and also feeding all the other businesses then as well, adverts as well, which they flipped recently.
Absolutely.
Last year.
Yeah. So they did a great job in using the success and also kind of that network effect. You know, once they had a great audience on Daft, gave them a great platform to start advertising their other sites, you know, and enticing users to use the others. So they did a really good job of trialing a few different things in a digital space, and it was great to see from, you know, an indigenous company.
Yeah, and you mentioned the network effect there, because that kind of leads us neatly to where you are now. So you're now General Manager of Uber Ireland, and the importance of the network effect there, but also the mapping, the mapping world that's so important to Uber's present as well as its future. Can we talk about your role with Uber?
Yeah, certainly. So I'm General Manager for Uber Ireland and Northern Ireland. We've we're operational in Dublin and Belfast, meaning we have sort of cars on the roads in those cities. We also have a really large, what we call a centre of excellence, which is our customer service hub for Europe, and that sits down in Limerick. So there's currently just under, 200 people there now, and they're sort of servicing all of our partner drivers and passengers across Europe. So big part of our European business is that grows so quickly. And my role is really to try to expand our services on Irish roads.
Yeah, and so to put it in context, what kind of figures? How many cars in Ireland, and how many drivers that kind of way, or taxi drivers?
Yeah, we've got thousands of taxi drivers lined up, and one of the benefits of a service like Uber is drivers switch it on, switch it off whenever they like. So there's no set shifts, there's nothing like that. So, you know, the numbers will fluctuate depending on the season with Uber. But we're not growing anywhere near as fast in Ireland as we are in other markets. I mean, Uber's a pretty incredible story. In 5 years, it's, you know, spread to over 70 countries and over 500 cities. And the growth has been tremendous. In Ireland, we're not seeing that growth, which is unfortunate, because there's some really exciting things that have come with Uber and all these other different cities. And it was when I saw Uber operating in my hometown of Melbourne that made me really think this is something I really want to do. Like, just seeing them turn so many cars that were on the road into part of our transport ecosystem just meant there was, you know, for the first time in Melbourne, you know, reliable, you know, a car at the push of a button within minutes, and a really affordable prices. So, yeah, I saw that in Melbourne and I just thought, wow, Ireland is the perfect place for this.
Yeah.
Like, it really, really is. So we obviously still think it is. We're still working pretty hard to bring those services in. At the moment, there's some regulatory challenges with doing that, but we certainly think we'll get through those and launch what will be a really exciting service in Ireland.
So, like, looking at some of the kind of the failures of Halo, essentially, you know, I've looked at this before. Was Halo fail, for example, in the States because they didn't act local? Because Uber seems to think global but act local and adapt to each market, and that seems to be the real success of what you've done. And what are the challenges in Ireland? So what do you see as the kind of blockers or ones that you have to overcome here? You mentioned regulatory stuff, but what else are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the big one is our service is UberX. So to give the users, the listeners, an idea, basically our ambition is to challenge private car ownership. So have a system where you can get a button, get a ride at the push of a button so affordably and so reliably that it challenges your need to own your own private car. Now, that's not going to happen until a lot of the cars that are already on the road become part of that ecosystem. So in Ireland, there's 1.9 million cars on the road. Only 21,000 of those are taxi. So that's a really small fraction. And, you know, as much as we see in Dublin City at the moment and sort of the outskirts of Dublin City, it's not always that easy to get a taxi. When you think about places outside of Dublin, you know, outside of the city centres, there's no way you could expect a reliable ride within minutes and at affordable prices. You know, we're talking about being 30, 40, 50% cheaper than traditional taxis in a lot of the markets we operate in. So that becomes really exciting.
Yeah.
Like, it becomes, you know, technology has allowed us to overcome a lot of the challenges previously that would have stopped these things. You know, it's now safer to ride with Uber because of all the technology that comes, you know, within the app. So it's a really exciting prospect, like, to be able to think about what Dublin or what Ireland could be like if, you know, we had far more cars around to take us there. The exciting part about it for us is that, you know, we're not asking the government to give us any money for infrastructure. We are talking about just getting more bums on the seats of the cars that are already out there on the road. So that has huge benefits for easing congestion in city centres. You know, we can start taking cars off the road because people no longer need to own their own, and they can share the cars that are going around. And we can start reducing, you know, carbon emissions, which is going to be really important for all governments.
Yeah, and for someone who owns a car, get maximised the usage of that car because it spends most of its time parked.
Absolutely, yeah. We do the math on it and believe that it's about 94% of the time. It's either parked out the front of your house, in a shopping centre, you know, at work. it's the second most expensive asset normally you'll buy in your life. And yet, it just sits around doing nothing.
It's amazing. So. And deteriorates, and the price of it just goes down and down.
So as soon as you drive it off the lot, it knocks about a tenth of the value off or something. So, we certainly see the benefits then. And what's really exciting is the people that can start seeing these economic opportunities. So the people who do own their own cars, we're seeing great case studies of stay-at-home mums and dads who send the kids to school, and then they can supplement the family income by going out, driving it around and using it to drive their fellow citizen from A to B. You know, a lot of students study during the day, come out at night when it suits them.
Yeah.
It's really great things. You know, we're seeing a lot of people who are nearing retirement or have retired who don't really want to be at home, you know, every day of the week. So they're seeing it as a great opportunity to go out.
Because that, but before, like, that was one of the things I was thinking about this is when, because people are living longer because of technology as well. People are living longer. This has given them some supplementary income to a pension and also keeping them occupied, because there's that whole kind of boredom effect that comes obviously when you all of a sudden you stop working.
Yeah.
But look, I just wanted to tell you one of the best experiences I had with Uber was I was over in Texas in Dallas, and I was in a restaurant and I was leaving the restaurant and we had an amazing waiter, and next thing I order an Uber. My waiter drives up in the Uber, and I was like, no, it's okay. I'm waiting for an Uber. And he goes, I am your Uber. Just finished his shift. And but the thing about it
I
was,
I hope you tipped him over the dinner.
Yeah, I did. Luckily, he could have turned me down. Not you again, McCullen. So, but the funny thing was the level of service, because this is what really struck me. And okay, I'll take on board that he was a waiter and that was, he works in the service industry. But it was such a pleasant journey. I mean, he treated it so respectfully. He was a foreign national, and his car was immaculate. And I mean, that was one experience. I had another experience in Germany, again, in other countries. And the cars were ultimately clean. And is that what the Limerick team does?
The Limerick team are really good at answering challenges that come from both passengers and the partner drivers. And a lot of the time, it's about using the technology now we have in our pockets and just the real-time feedback loop. So at the end of every Uber journey, a passenger will rate their experience out of 5 stars, and the partner driver will themselves rate the experience or the passenger out of 5 stars. And it sounds a little bit trivial, but when you start thinking about that data in its full strength, it's incredible. It's a feedback loop. It's not just he said or she said. It's this ongoing feedback loop, which we're able to sort of envision back up to the partner drivers to say, hey, here's how people are finding you in relation to some of the other people using the platform. And, you know, it might be cleanliness, it might be pickup, it might be navigation, all these sorts of things. We can actually help them say, okay, this is how I'm driving, this is how I'm in relation to some other people. And we find that a lot of people take that on board, and actually it helps them change their behavior or helps them get a better sense of how they could provide a better service, which fundamentally we find that these people really want to do. It's their own car, it's their own time, and you know, they really feel a personal belonging to their service that they're offering.
Yeah, and it reminds me of that quote about like facts without data are just opinions. And you know, if you're going to somebody and it's a touchy subject, you're kind of going, your car smells, you know, if the data tells us 20 passengers says your car is smelly or your car needs work or it's dirty, then the driver has to take action, and it makes it objective, I suppose.
It does, yeah. And look, a lot of them, a lot of the partner drivers that we do speak to are really grateful, because we do this in a really nice way. The things that bubble up on the app, and they can read all the comments that their passengers have left for them. You know, the ones that are not so great, but the ones that are fantastic as well. And we find that a lot of drivers who have driven professionally before, who come over to work on the Uber platform, they get a real buzz out of getting that real-time feedback about, you know, great crack, had a great conversation, great stories. And it certainly keeps them, gives them great satisfaction being able to read all of that as well during their day.
Yeah, no, and just to fast forward a bit now, because you mentioned it, we talked about the maps and that kind of background you had of maps. But like it is really, and you talked about technology being at the core of the platform, but maps are at the absolute core of the platform. And when you think of the kind of Apple disaster a few years ago with their Maps product.
Mm.
And people kind of go, why did Apple go and push for this quickly? And you kind of go, because without Maps, context is not there. And Google have such a massive head start. But in an Uber world, the map is the platform, really. I mean, and yeah. you have, and I don't think, I think people may think Uber uses Google, yeah, for to get ahead at the start, but you have a team, and some of the original Googlers who worked on the mapping platform work in an Uber.
Yeah, absolutely. We're putting some huge resource into the mapping product. And exactly as you said, I mean, that is fundamental to what we operate. And it's not just kind of trying to replicate what Google Maps might have done. We've got our own really specific needs for maps. You know, the product itself has really specific needs to identify what are the safest, the most efficient places to pick up around the city centre, what is, you know, the safest way to drive, what's the safest way to go. And what we're finding is that there's huge amounts that we can get out of mapping our own data. And it's not for us, even when we talk about the maps, for us it's really about all of the data that we're capturing, like understanding how a city moves, where the demand is, where they're going, what times of the day, peaks and flows. We think it's really going to help us put us in a good position when we see things unfolding and we do see this great drop in private car ownership and a lot more shared car ownership and eventually things like full fleets of shared cars out in the road, which we'll hopefully be able to have a great knowledge of and got all that data to say, well, these are the most efficient ways of doing it. And that can impact everything. That can start impacting your pricing you can offer because you can understand what's the most efficient, what's the fastest, the most popular. We're looking at ways now at the moment to really start making people share their riding experience as passengers. So Uber Pool is probably one of our most successful products in the last year or two, a bit like Uber version 2.0. It's not just that Aiden wants to get from Donnybrook into town. It's that Kieran might be sitting in Ranelagh on the way, and if it means that it's cheaper for you, your overall journey, you're happy to pick up one other person on the way, drop them off and drop them off. For the drivers, that's great because it gives them this perpetual trip almost. They can be picking up, dropping off, and therefore they've always got someone in the car, which means they kind of have the opportunity to be always earning. So to do those sorts of things, the mapping becomes key, really becomes key to start learning about, okay, well, could we start thinking about making a journey cheaper if the person's prepared to go and stand on that corner? And there's all sorts of really exciting things. So, yeah, the matching project is certainly a huge, huge priority for us. We've got some great talent and skills in the team, but it's going to be a big, big project. There's no doubt about, you know, Google did a pretty fantastic job, but we've got our own sort of things to look for and niches to crack.
But even the value of that from, I mean, something you could sell. I mean, like, so, you know, let's think about the disruption now. So not the obvious disruption, like obviously to the taxi industry or to transport industry, to you know, transport like buses and trains, etc. Let's park all that stuff and move a little bit forward into stuff like, what happens now when driverless cars kind of come in? So when there's no drivers driving those cars, and I don't know when that will become mainstream, but, and we'll have a few accidents along the way, I'm sure, like we already have. But so what happens then? I mean, you have the platform and you're, because Elon Musk announced the Tesla master plan recently, master plan 2.0 recently, and he talked about this where your Tesla can be working for you when you're not using it, and it's similar. It's a good bit forward ahead of Uber's strategy at the moment, but like where does Uber fit in that world?
Well, I kind of think me personally, I kind of read that and think I'm not even sure why you'd want to own that Tesla in the first place. Why do you need to have it come back to you? I really see the movement continuing of shared services. And I guess we're seeing that everywhere. That's not just in ride sharing. We're seeing that in Dublin Bikes is a great example. We're seeing that in all sorts of transportation, but all other walks of life. Look at Netflix and, you know, the Airbnbs. Well, the Airbnb is probably not one, but it's now just a shared service. We take so many of these things in life that we no longer need that ownership for. Mm. And that's certainly happening, I think. So I think certainly there will be a time, and you know, I've got young kids, and I certainly don't think that they'll be driving cars.
Yeah.
I just don't think that it's – and someone said to me the other day, why do I think – why am I so certain? It's because that autonomous cars are going to save lives. If I was to come onto this show and say, hey, I've got this amazing thing, it's called the automobile, we're going to drive them in Ireland, but 400 to 500 people a year are going to die on the roads. There's no way I'd be allowed to run that product. Mm. There's 1 million people that die on the roads a year. So autonomous cars are going to have a huge impact on saving lives. So what I think we'll see, I think it will come sooner than we expect, but I think that transition between the first ones arriving in our streets to no one driving cars anymore will be a bit longer than everyone's making out. Like that will take decades to kind of to filter through. But
yeah, it's that analogy of the boiling frog. That you know, you put a. Have you heard this one? I only heard this one with Carl Flannery, CEO of Storm Technologies, on the show. And he told me about this. I never heard about this. But the boiling frog analogy is: you can put a frog in water and gradually boil the water, and it won't jump out because it doesn't notice because it gradually adapts, right? And so it's a bit of a myth, but. He used it as an analogy for the world. All these changes are gradually happening around us and we don't notice until in 30 years' time, like you said, there'll be driverless cars in a sharing economy and everybody will be going to go, oh yeah, was that not the way it always was? I don't really remember. All I remember was there was a horse, then an automobile, and then this happened. But it's the same kind of thing. And I suppose those incremental changes or incremental innovations where it goes from... It goes to Uber, and then it goes to sharing, the Uber sharing, and then all of a sudden, driverless cars using the Uber platform. So Uber is kind of, this is what I love about companies like Uber, that they're thinking ahead all the time, and traditional companies don't do that. They don't invest in the future, or what will that do? For example, right, so radio, what does Uber driverless cars do to radio? Because radio listenership is most strong in
great call,
in
yeah,
cars. So in the cars. Yeah. So now all of a sudden I can read, I can do my work, I can watch the TV, I can watch Netflix. What does that do to terrestrial TV?
Yeah.
Destroys that because it's all an on-demand economy.
Yeah.
So your habits at home are now taken over by the car that you don't own. And then also what that means is your iPad or your device that you use to view becomes way more important to you as well. So there's this kind of disruption that people don't see happening that will have a huge effect on the world.
Yeah, it's a really good point. We had a bit of a play around at the moment. And when you start thinking about Uber, Uber's been fantastic at disrupting itself. So Uber's first incarnation was as a high-end chauffeur service on demand. And that was what we kind of started. It's really luxury brand chauffeur cars in San Francisco, which would have been a great business. But the guys quickly saw an opportunity to disrupt themselves by going for the average cars out in the road, you know, those millions and millions of cars that are already out in the road at a really affordable price point. And of course, a lot of people said, we're eating into your luxury business mode there, but we did that. And then Uber Pool, which I talked about before, which is about even cheaper transportation by getting people to share. A lot of people are like, well, that's surely just going to eat into your UberX business. But no, we'd keep disrupting ourselves because we think it's the right thing to do. And if we're not doing it, somebody else will quickly be doing it. So we're already starting to look at, you know, in more mature cities, if we can deliver you a car within 4 or 5 minutes from pushing a button on your smartphone, what else can we start delivering it?
Yeah, because that's something that's really interesting because you've done some nice partnerships in that world. Like, you know, even rewards, et cetera, using certain cards, you get lesser fees. But you have, was it Lyft? You did you did some delivery. So there's Uber delivery.
So we did a partnership, which I actually, with Walmart in the States. Okay. And that's a really interesting one, which I don't know all the details to, but the one we've kind of launched in a few more cities around the US, it's called Uber Rush.
Rush.
Idea behind that is what we're hearing from so many people in the cities we're operating in, so many small business owners, was that, you know, they opened up their own small businesses because they liked whatever it was, owning the record shop, making cakes, buying flowers. None of them wanted to get into online sales because they didn't have to worry about the logistics. So Uber Rush is kind of our play to see, can we be that logistics partner for these small businesses? So can we allow them to start selling online and then delivery through a pretty simple to use Uber platform? And we think there's a really exciting play for us there.
Yeah.
You know, once we can start, and again, once we can start diving into that data and understanding, well, hang on a sec, yeah, we understand that that's a really busy route. We may be able to, you know, do two or three deliveries through there. Once you start playing around with all of that data and seeing, okay, what will be the working price points to make this business work?
Yeah.
It becomes pretty fascinating.
But what's really nice is, you know, you talk a lot of the talk in software development is all about, you know, lean development and MVPs, minimal viable products. You're doing that with physical world where you're actually little trials here, measuring them, what's working, what's not, what kind of price points, and you've several of those going on at the same time, and it's that mindset that's frustrating not to see in traditional companies, because they would see, so say you decide, okay, the Rush project was a disaster, we closed it, you'll go, that was a great success that we didn't pour millions into it
or
billions and just throw the kitchen sink at it and go, that's our future. Instead you're going, here's several futures, we're going to back them all, see which ones fail and which, and then measure, why did they fail, is it too early, was the logistics wrong, was the price point wrong? And that mindset is fantastic to have. And how is that embedded in the company? Like, I know it comes from obviously leadership, but how do you make it go throughout the whole veins of the company?
They do a great job of that. I must say, it's the thing I've since coming into the company, I've been really wowed by is just how they share those learnings. They've got a great culture, what they call playbooking. So pretty much any sort of experiment, anything that's done, whether it be good or bad, we playbook. And they make that really easy to find. Most of the way that, I mean, the reason that Uber's been able to scale at such pace is because each city team is pretty autonomous. You've given a small team, you're thrown at a city, and it's make it work. Whatever needs to happen, you need to work it out. Now, you've got all these resources, you've got all this help behind you, but ultimately.
So that's Act Local. That's the local piece that comes in, and that's where it's been so successful.
Yeah, it has. And one of our key cultural values, we call them, is celebrate your city. Like, it's really about what is it that makes your city tick? What is it that it's going to make Uber a success in your city? And you need to get down and really learn that. So a lot of our innovation has come from, we've got this, I guess they call it kind of marketing stunts almost. And
guerrilla marketing.
Kind of. Like one of the first ones we did in the States was Uber ice cream. One day of the year, we just said, right, we're all going to start delivering ice cream for free. And it's a way of just getting people to talk about the brand differently, people to download the app for free ice cream, who then go, okay, actually that's really smart technology. I might start ordering my cars through the same process. And each city is kind of given that challenge to say, well, what is it that your city would love to see? What can we do? What's going to make your city talk? And we've learned so much from those kind of things, which are realistically just kind of PR stunts and a bit of fun a lot of the time. But it really does help that innovation, because each city wants to make theirs such a success, and that culture of playbooking and making sure that all the learnings are there,
captured,
read through them, done them. And it's not that, I think there's a couple of things we've failed at multiple times, because we'll come back to the playbook and say, right, well, that city did that. I know how I'll improve it. I'll do it this way. Of course, sometimes it doesn't work, and someone will come back to it a few months later and say, this has got to work. It's such a great idea. And we're like, okay, I'll read the playbooks and then have a look. No, I think I can do it this way. And I've seen a couple of them now, haven't worked again. But it really is that combined learning and just pushing people to innovate, which has really been enlightening for me.
That's great. And you know, I was just thinking, so we've talked about a lot of the kind of innovations and the disruptions, etc. But like, if you think about the opportunities, I'm just thinking now from an Irish perspective. So public houses, so pubs were hit hard when drink driving laws were increased, etc. This changes the game again. So you talk about getting, you know, mass scale of Uber across the country, self-driving cars, etc. Like, I'd be looking at but buying pubs in rural areas, you know, because it makes them more of a destination. Then. Yeah. So if you put on, you know, really interesting Irish music at a beautiful location that had no taxis and had no people that could drive there before, all of a sudden changed the game for those. So there's, you win some, you lose some. So for example, autonomous cars, you know, you have the third age of people living longer that yeah. used to be able to make a bit of money from driving or taxi driving. They're kind of being disrupted now because the cars are autonomous. Then you have vehicle manufacturers that are kind of going, uh-oh, people aren't buying cars anymore. And like, I suppose in that world, right, what happens to the vehicle manufacturer? Like, because they're going, wow, people are already stopped buying cars because people are getting fed up with buying stuff and they're getting more into experiences. And that's where I'm going with the pub analogy.
Yeah.
Forgive me. But you're kind of going, well, people are kind of going, okay, I want to buy more experiences. I want to experience life more instead of buying stuff that just goes off and becomes decrepit and whatever. So, but for the car manufacturer, this world, and I know Elon Musk said about Tesla and this car doing the work for you in the meantime, but I agree with you. I'm going to go, I don't need a car.
Mm.
Why would I need a car and have to do parking and all that kind of stuff? That's a pain. And I know you probably send the car to park by itself, et cetera. But
where? Do you have to buy a car park in your space? I mean, think about the benefits this has to housing in inner city. Like my background in Duft has made me all more aware of this, but our building regulations require apartments in the city to have car parks. It's like, if they're not required, we can build apartments in the city for a lot cheaper. You know, we can start getting people, we can start changing the face of inner city living. And that sounds all very grandiose, but think about if there's no need for all the car parks in the inner city, and not just, you know, the big multi-story car parks, but all the sides of the streets that we currently have to give over to car parks.
Yeah.
When this becomes a reality, when people don't need to own their cars and park them up on sides of streets all day and all night long, there's this massive chunk of the city which we can start doing new things with. Mm. And whether that's expanding retail, bikeways, all these kinds of really exciting things. When I start speaking to a lot of town planners from around the world, that's what they really love about Uber. They really start seeing it opening up the city again for them and being able to do things. And I think you're right. I think there's going to be a nice mix and match between services that do, you know, across city runs like Uber. It's a great company, Blah Blah Cars, a French company that's really, really moved ahead with doing sort of the intercity cars. You know, there's going to be lots of different players, lots of different niches which support us not needing to own cars because we're starting to use multimodal services. One of the things we're really seeing in London is that Uber usage is actually connecting people from their homes to public railways and public bus services. So it's about that last mile solution. It's not so much about I'm going to forego public transport and take get my car.
It's complimentary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as I said, that's what's really exciting is that how does it interplay with all these things that a city's now changing and going through? What does it do to our public transport? We don't need probably all these circuitous bus routes because we can say, look, let's have the most direct bus routes. Let's have these
clean up the roads again.
Like, absolutely. You know, yeah. Let's start taking some roads off because there's other ways of getting us from our houses to these sort of main public corridors.
And it does. I mean, again, shooting forward again to driverless, but like you go to your rural housing becomes more interesting again because like you're kind of going, it becomes cheaper as well. And you talk about Uber Pool. You know, you have several people acting like a community and maybe you don't like your neighbour. Can you remove people or block them?
We'll have to work on a feature for that, I think, won't we?
Uber block. But, you know, the one thing it's been brilliant talking to you is it kind of brings to my mind is no matter what the future is, you got to back several versions of it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to come, you know, and the amount of disruption we talked about, you know, from everyone involved is going to happen anyway. We don't know when.
Yeah.
Because that mass adoption piece is the hard one to guess at, but you got to make moves towards it to survive and I suppose future-proof.
And look, it's a fascinating play at the moment about what the car manufacturers are doing with these new technology companies. When you look at who's really pushing towards a lot of that software, it's Google, it's Apple, it's Uber, digital companies that have never had a background in car manufacturing. But there needs to be a place where this all matches because none of us have backgrounds in, you know, mass scaling car manufacturing either. So it really is, as you said, I think you're wanting to back a few players in this race because we're not entirely sure how this is all going to all end up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting no matter what. Ciarán Hart, MD of Uber Ireland, thanks for coming into us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers.